If I don't say it enough, Pauly Reindel does a really good job on many, many different things on this show. Today, he is kind of filling in with extra responsibilities as the co-host with Woodsy off, but he's still doing all of his normal duties of running the YouTube stream and running the board and all of our sound bites and commercials and booking the show as the producer and putting together the promos. And everything that you do, Paul, you do a great job.
Hey, thank you.
And
Paul, you do a great job.
Paul, you do a great job. So I don't say it enough, but you really do.
Ben, you do a great job.
I'm curious. So usually you set up guests like Brett Boone, who just joined us in our last segment, mm-hmm. via text. In fact, when was the last time you actually called someone to try to book a guest?
I couldn't even tell you. There's a couple times, you know who's notorious for it? Andy Ashby. I'll shoot him a text. And he will call me immediately.
Call you
he
back.
He will not text me back.
But you don't call him. He calls you.
Yeah, I don't reach out. I don't really reach out to anybody almost.
Right. It's all done via text.
Not even just work related. Like
I wish that it existed when I was producing shows. Because
like if I called a friend even, like just to catch up randomly without texting them, hey, are you busy? Like,
crazy.
Hey, you want to chat? They'd be like, hey, is everything okay?
Yeah.
Are you okay?
It's weird at this point. Yeah. Well, I saw this tweet yesterday from our colleague and fellow producer, Matt Scraby. Said, I've been looking through some of my past texts and seeing which guests we've had in the past. One thing is true. I call dudes sir way too much. They must be like, who is this guy calling me sir? Context is a thank you. Thank you, sir. Or yes, sir. 240 works great. Do you call anybody sir anymore? Is there any reason to call someone sir?
Yeah, sure.
You do?
Yeah. I mean,
unless you're like a waiter,
I think a server
at a restaurant.
It's a sign of respect.
I think it's weird now. I think it's strange nowadays. I wouldn't, like Michael, our boss, if he came in and he said, oh, great show. I went, oh, thank you, sir.
I mean,
unless it was really casual, like
okay, just, like if Michael and Annie walked by, I probably wouldn't. Hello, sir. Hello, ma'am. But I probably wouldn't say that. But I would casually be like, "Thank you, sir," or something like that. Like,
I mean, you know, certainly you can do the old "Yes, sir," you know, and get excited about something. But to really, with like no irony, no jokingness about it, to refer to someone as sir, even if they hold a higher station. I mean, maybe like the president of the United States. Oh, yes, sir. Well, yeah. Right away, sir.
Sure.
But, I mean, unless you're like a butler and you're employed by someone.
Like, I'm going to text Eno Saris here before too long to make sure he's good to go for 8:35 tomorrow morning, and I probably won't say with, you know, good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir.
But it's not unheard of if he's like, yeah, good to go. I'd be like, awesome. Thank you, sir. And maybe the emoji or something. Like,
I think part of it is that I know I'd feel weird if people... I do feel weird when people refer to me as sir in a non-ironic way. Even if I'm at like a restaurant, I'll take you right to your table, sir. It feels odd nowadays. Right. Peter Seidler wanted me to call him Peter.
Right.
Like, you know, okay, he owns the Padres. Pretty much the most important guy in town.
One in a million.
But... You know, Ron Fowler was the same way. He certainly did not want to be referred to as sir. And, you know, they're older school type people. It's just not something that you hear unless you're in the military or, you know, in a chain of command. I just don't think you're going to see it anymore. And I said, it struck me as, yeah, you can use it as a yes, sir. You know, just kind of a that works sort of thing. But to actually unironically use sir or ma'am nowadays.
I don't think there's anything weird
I don't think there's any reason for it anymore.
I think it's a sign of respect.
Okay.
No big deal.
All right, let's get some headlines. It is time for today's Reindel Report.
Thank
another
you,
Pauly responsibility.
And get things started here with our edition, today's edition of the Reindel Report.
Now tuned into the greatest.
Welcome to the Reindel Report.
with Paul Reindel.
Hi, Paul.
All right.
Two stories from the world of sports that we haven't gotten to yet.
We'll start off in Major League Baseball.
And one story that you didn't know you needed.
Are you laughing, biatch?
It's the Reindel Report.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
On 97.3 The Fan.
Are you ready to bless the mood? I need some help, please.
That was good.
Can I get a hoy? Oh, yeah.
All right.
All right.
Take it away, sir.
Thank you, sir. Let's see, sir. We will start off with...
I've distracted you now.
Yeah, now you got me going. Now I'm trying to find my first story. Okay, here we go. Big story in baseball yesterday. Awful story. We were actually kicking around. Is this a don't do this? And I said no, because you can't really give a don't do this to a guy for getting hurt. It's a don't do this situation for the game and for us as fans, but it was announced yesterday Mike Trout needs knee surgery for a torn meniscus. And last I saw, they didn't really know the extent of the injury. It wasn't, when it was reported yesterday, it was not expected to be season ending, but it feels like if we're not already there, we're very, very close to the end of the Mike Trout era. He's one of the best players to ever play the game. I respect the guy for playing his career the way he wants to and staying with one team. I think it's a crime against the sport that he's got, what, 12 ABs in the postseason or whatever it is. Like, he's got nothing. And the fact that he doesn't have a signature October moment, it pains me as a baseball fan. I'm not an Angels fan. I'm a fan of baseball.
His career will go down perhaps as the greatest career with the least impact on baseball of all time. And that is sad.
Yeah.
You think about guys like, who was like Ernie Banks, Hall of Fame career, never played a single postseason game for the Cubs in his entire career. But that was in the day before wild cards. Now in the wild card era, to have only a handful of playoff at-bats in an entire career in which, for most of that time, you were the or one of the best players in all of baseball. It is kind of sad that you think about it. I'll throw in the one don't do this element if we're going to go that direction for Mike Trout. He was quoted in the story saying, "You play the game hard and S happens." Yeah, but there are a lot of, I mean, everyone, for the most part, plays the game hard. Some guys harder than others, but that you can't use that as an excuse. Well, hey, if you want me to be playing hard, then I'm going to be getting hurt. Give me Manny Machado. Give me the guy who may take his foot off the gas every once in a while, but is out there for 160 games a season. I'm sorry. Mike Trout may be one of the greats, but this is now the fourth consecutive season in which he's going to miss significant amounts of time. And if he's not on the field, he's not one of the better players anymore. He was in the 2010s. 2020s, he's just been okay. And that's too bad, because now he's the only star that the Angels have, with Ohtani gone, and they're quickly falling to out of relevance again in the American League West this year.
I'd love to see him bounce back, but
of course,
man, it's just it's rough seeing this happen to a guy like Mike Trout.
Totally.
Next up, got a story here from Front Office Sports. Says the Raiders, Las Vegas Raiders, are launching their own fan cruise in 2025. It's a 7-night trip going from Los Angeles to the Mexican Riviera. On the cruise, there will be an open bar, some mini golf, a casino, autograph sessions, dining with the alumni. Alumni include Reggie Kinlaw, Jacoby Ford, Willie Gault, and others. Rooms go from $2,400 up to $16,000. And he said this is a fairly common thing, he thought. I couldn't remember seeing a ton of these team-sponsored, team-themed cruises, but is that something that, like, let's say the Padres put together a Padres cruise with, you know, Brett Boone Ashby.
This has been a thing for actually longer than you'd think, Paulie. You may not have heard of it, but I remember even back like in the 80s and 90s, like team fan cruises were definitely a thing. In fact, I remember, maybe someone can confirm this for me. I remember like a Saturday Night Live spoof where they did I want to say it was like the Phillies alumni cruise. And then all they did was just list like random old Phillies. Like, come join the cruise with players like Matt Noakes. And, you know, just the like bottom of the barrel players from Phillies history. And you can just get on a cruise with like hundreds of them. And they just kept listing names and names. But honestly, I mean, I'd go on a Padres cruise if they did a cruise. Would you go? Now, here's the question. Tier ones. Would you go on a Ben and Woods cruise? Ooh. Ben, Woods, Paul, maybe a 97.3 The Fan cruise. We just get everybody on a boat.
I don't even know if I would want to go on the Ben and Woods cruise.
We're all trapped on a boat. Several days.
I don't know. I have
nowhere
heard,
to escape, nowhere to go.
I've never heard a bad thing about a cruise, like from people that have gone on
them. You've never heard a bad thing about a cruise?
No, that's not what I said. Okay. From people that I personally know that have been on cruises. Okay. They've all had great times. I've seen horror stories from cruises.
I've been on one cruise in my life. We were all seasick the first night.
I don't know. I've never been on a cruise.
It turned out okay in the next couple of days, but getting our sea legs was rough. This was a Disney cruise when I was like 12 or 13. Had to fly to Florida, cruise to the Bahamas and back, and we were all miserable that first night. It was like red-eye flight, get on a cruise. You just like sit down to the first meal, and you're down in like the dining room, and the ship is now like starting to chug out into sea, and you feel it going, but you can't see out the window, and you're like, it's like feeling car sick, but you're eating dinner at the same time.
I've been on boats. I've never gotten good. Like seasick. I've never been on a big cruise ship or anything like that. I don't know that I'm cut out for a cruise.
You know, the amenities are nice.
It's got everything I want.
You know, I like a good midnight buffet. That's part of my likes. That's where that's what cruises are famous for. You get a midnight buffet, you get shows, and there's casinos at sea, because once you're out of port, you know, international law applies, so they can open up the casino while you're out there. Yeah, you can have a lot of fun on a Ben and Woods or a Padres alumni cruise, perhaps. Well, you know Randy Jones would be there if there's a cruise. They will definitely have. Randy will be there.
100%. I would do the yacht excursions. Like, you ever watch Below Deck? It's a big chartered yacht.
Yeah.
I would do that. I don't know that I would do a cruise.
Yeah, a little more of a private
like 10
one.
People maybe. Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna send you the video. Someone, Adam in the chat, said it's the Super Sports Cruise. Right, SNL skit, so I will try to send this to you.
I'll definitely watch that. And then finally, a lot of bee talk this morning. We talked about the two-hour delay earlier in the show over in Arizona between the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers. The game was delayed 2 hours due to a beehive forming on the netting there right before the game. Five minutes before first pitch, they noticed the bees starting to swarm in there. I got a story here that is straight out of a horror movie, not the other one that Woods would probably be making a joke about right now. There was a 3-year-old in Charlotte recently was complaining about a noise that she kept hearing in her bedroom, and she was telling her parents, I think there's a monster in my room.
It's an overactive imagination.
Yes.
There's no monster in your closet.
Kids always think there's a monster under the bed or a monster in the closet, and she's I really think that there's a monster in my room. And they gave her a flashlight to protect her from the monster. And they kept hearing something. And finally, they thought they could hear like a buzzing. And they thought maybe this is just the fan, the ceiling fan or something. Something's off. And let's get it figured out. And after looking into it a little bit more, they could definitely tell that there was something in the walls of this 3-year-old girl's bedroom.
The noise was coming from inside the house.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. And it turns out that they had pest control come out and try to, like, is there something in the, like, you know, rats getting in the walls or something? What is going on? And they used, like, thermal heat to see what was behind the walls.
Infrared scan.
Dude, they estimated that there was a beehive so big in this little girl's walls, 60,000 bees living in the walls of her bedroom. They had to like break the wall open, and they said it looked like a movie as thousands and thousands of bees just come flying through the hole in the wall. Was like
she was not imagining the monster in her room. It was definitely real. Oh,
So she and her husband contacted a beekeeper who noticed the insects were traveling towards the floorboards of the attic right above their daughter's bedroom. The bees had spent 8 months building the monster hive.
It had been there for most of the year before they realized it.
The thermal camera that was brought to scan the walls, they said it lit up like it was Christmas. Oh, God. Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
Awful. All right, I've sent you the Super Sports Cruise clip. Let's play that when we come back. We'll also pay off the Incorporator, if you missed it earlier. Jesse Agler trying to work the word, wrinkle?
Baggy wrinkle.
Baggy wrinkle into last night's broadcast. We'll have that for you coming up next after a check of traffic. Don't go anywhere. Ben and Paul on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Tim Flannery from the top deck tweeting in response to Woods and our discussion of Brian Kenny's insane Fernando Tatis Jr. comments yesterday on MLB Network, saying, "I'd come out of working his show in great need of a double martini every single time." Ouch. Ouch. It's Ben and Paul wrapping it up. Last couple of segments here on a Wednesday. Good. Woods will be back tomorrow. So we found that clip. We were talking about the Raiders going to do a fan cruise. And I told Paul, this idea goes back decades. There has been baseball and sports teams cruises for a long time. Maybe they went out of fashion recently, but this is just reviving an old idea. In fact, it was so common that Saturday Night Live even parodied it back in the day with a Super Sports Cruise clip. And here's a little bit of this one. I would say this is probably from the early 90s.
This is Super Sports Tour's biggest baseball cruise ever. Over 700 major leaguers sailing with you and 11 other lucky guests. That's almost 70 players per passenger. It's 6 glorious days and nights through the beautiful waters of the Caribbean, including a stop in the Dominican Republic, where we'll be joined by the Dodgers' Ramon Martinez and the Astros' Andujar Cedeño. Don't miss this unprecedented opportunity. Prices start at $399. Space is limited on the ship. So don't delay. Call 1-600-HOME-RUN today.
We're on vacation, and you should be too.
Call now.
I think they listed about 70 other players in that skit as well. But yeah, this is not a new idea of a sports cruise. I would go on one, though. I think it would be a lot of fun. Hang out with some ball players for a few days. You probably get tired of it after a little while, though.
Yeah, it's the idea of just being out in the middle of the ocean or something.
Trapped.
It kind of freaks me
out.
There's
nowhere to go.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to go on a cruise.
It just kind of freaks me out.
It better be a really, really good cruise if you're out there.
Yeah.
All right. Yesterday was an Incorporator Tuesday. Jesse Agler joined us at 8:30, and we gave him the Incorporator word. And what was it? I keep forgetting it.
Baggy wrinkle.
Baggy was my word, too. Baggy wrinkle. It's a sailing term in which it's some soft material that you put around the lines, the rigging, to protect the sails, the baggy wrinkle. Now, Jesse kind of took it in a different direction. When David Bell was arguing balls and strikes between the seventh and the eighth inning and got ejected, he got pretty upset and ended up kicking a whole bunch of stuff on the field, including one of the donuts. And that's where Jesse saw his opportunity to get baggy wrinkle into the game.
1-0 pitch, Steer hits it hard but foul the other way out of play. He was ejected and he really got his money's worth. He was face to face with Blazer. At one point, you could see Blazer pat his chest and say, "I'm trying my best," which I guess is really all you can say if you're an umpire. 1-1 to Steer as Matsui kicks and deals. Pitch swung on and missed. Strike two. So Bell was out there, really got his money's worth, screaming, yelling, ranting, raving. 28th career ejection for David Bell. And then walking back to the dugout, the Reds, of course, have all their weights and rosin bags and stuff on their on-deck area. And Bell kicked them like a place kicker and knocked them all over the place. They had gotten out of their baggy wrinkle and they were just sort of all sprayed about. And quite a show put on by David Bell. 1-2 to Steer, swung on and missed strike three.
So Jesse gets the Incorporator word in. I had an idea, and we're trying to always come up with twists on the Incorporator. And this may be too tough even for Jesse, as good as he is. I would come up maybe with a simpler word for him, but I would like at least once for the Incorporator to be used in a home run call. So, ooh, like a Padres player hits a home run, or like an RBI, like a key highlight to the game, and somehow get the incorporator in to a moment that really matters during the game. Because oftentimes Jesse will throw it in during conversations with Tony Gwynn Jr. or Bob Scanlon, or, you know, just an aside about the game. But to actually get it into a highlight that would like be included in our Padres wrap up the next day, I think that is what could really take the challenge to its final ultimate level.
Hmm.
An incorporator in an actual game highlight.
Interesting. I love that.
Yeah, yeah, that may be tough. Jesse may say, hey,
you
we don't want to mess
how
with
many
the
highlights you're going to get.
You don't. And Jesse may not want to mess with the integrity. And obviously, I don't think you could do baggy wrinkle in the middle of a highlight. But if you had just a word, kind of a normal but just offbeat word that Jesse could figure out a way, like on an RBI double.
We
or
lower
a,
the difficulty of the word itself, but we raise the
difficulty
stakes.
Of okay. where it has to be incorporated into the game, into an actual highlight that will make it onto the recap, onto like Sammy's post-game show highlights or onto our Padres wrap-up the next day. That, I think, may be the next frontier of the incorporator that we have yet to visit for Jesse Agler.
We have a really bad problem on this show, all three of us, of coming up with ideas that we like and then forgetting about them entirely.
That's
so
true.
Let's actually try to remember that.
That's true. Well, you know, Woods, help us remember, except he's not here today. Just a couple of details emerging yesterday. I haven't forgotten about the Ipe Mizuhara gambling investigation, even though Shohei pretty much has gotten off the hook based on everything that's come out so far, was not in the know, was just a victim of theft. The details are very interesting, Pauly. The story that emerged yesterday. So where was all this money going? These $500,000, you know, basically wire transfers that Mizuhara was taking from Ohtani's account and sending to the bookie. How does this not raise massive red flags? How do they get away with it for so long? Obviously, they didn't get away with it forever.
How'd they get away with it once, let alone however many times it actually happened?
So some of the details that were emerging with the Boyer, who was the bookie, who was kind of at the center of this investigation, and he is yet to be charged, actually, but so what they do is he would take that $500,000 and he'd put it into his like casino marker account at like Las Vegas casinos, including Resorts World, which we were just talking about. I was just there a few days ago when I was visiting Las Vegas. And he would deposit into his account. Then he'd go gamble for a little while, you know, win a little bit, lose a little bit. And then he'd cash it out in chips. And now he's got this extra $500,000 and he takes it out of the casino in cash.
Wow.
Now, sounds like a brilliant scheme. Like, oh, how are they going to keep track of that with the millions and millions that go through a casino every day?
Right.
Someone deposits $500,000. Sometimes they win. Sometimes they lose. Obviously, if you win, you're going to walk out of there with some money. So he's just walking out with what they, you know, it's his own money. Apparently, though, casinos are held to a higher standard. And they do need to be aware of their customers, their gamblers. Like, hey, you can't just close your eyes and go, I don't know where the money's coming from. They actually they are actually responsible for, like, hey, if you've got a whale, like one of these big, you can't just say, I don't care where the money's coming from. You actually have to do some research and background. And they've actually gotten into some trouble for allowing bookmakers to, it's basically money laundering. You know, you've taken this $500,000, pretended it's your own, turned it into chips, and then turn it back into cash that you then walk out of the casino with. So a wire transfer from Shohei Ohtani then turns into a, you know, a bag full of cash that you're walking out of Resorts World or a different casino on the Las Vegas Strip.
So are these casinos being like labeled as affiliates with the
a little bit, yeah. You know,
they're,
at least they're violating like Nevada gambling regulations, if not
accomplices.
Laws. They are not following through with their responsibilities as a reputable gaming operation by letting people use their establishment to launder ill-gotten money from the sports betting trade. So, in case you were wondering, like, what actually happened to the money that Mizuhara was taking out of Shohei Ohtani's account? He would wire it to the casino, and then the guy in his account would like say, "Okay, I'm going to bet my $500,000," and yeah, he might win or lose $10,000 or $20,000, and he'd say, "Okay, I'm done for the day," and he'd cash out his chips, and all of a sudden, then he'd walk out with $500,000 in Shohei Ohtani's cash that Ipe Mizuhara had lost in sports gambling.
Wow.
So it was fascinating to me to see how this whole thing was working, and eventually, you know, the feds and everyone caught on to it, and that's why the investigation did get started. So those were some of the details that emerged yesterday. All right, we'll come back. Final segment. Want to look ahead to today's day game. San Diego Padres going for the series win over the Reds. And I believe Annie's going to check in for a little crossover on a Woodsless Wednesday. So Annie Heilbrun going to be with us when we come back on our final segment of Men of Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. As if Paulie didn't have enough to do, we also have some Legion tickets to give away that I neglected to do earlier, but let's do it right now. They got a big game coming up this Sunday at Snapdragon Stadium. Sorry, Paulie. Dallas Jackals will be in town, and you can win a pair by calling right now, 833-288-0973. Paulie's choice on the caller.
Oh, thank you.
What would you like?
Fourth caller.
Fourth caller, says Paulie. 833-288-0973. Call now. You can get your own tickets for San Diego's rugby team at SDLegion.com. Legion have done well in their first couple of seasons. We can only hope that San Diego FC, our new MLS team, will do as well as they get started as the Seals have done in their first couple of seasons. And the Legion, it looks like the San Diego FC MLS team is going to be landing a major international soccer star, according to reports, including one in the UT. The team is in final negotiations to sign Mexican national team star Chucky Lozano to a contract. It would be maybe a $12 million transfer fee. He would transfer in from his current Dutch club, PSV Eindhoven. He would play there until January and then join the San Diego FC club next year to their start of their first MLS season. Now, this month, May, is the 2024 MLS season gets underway. It'll be played without a San Diego team in town. 1 year from now, San Diego FC will be having their very first games at Snapdragon Stadium. And if all goes well, it looks like Chucky Lozano could be the star of that team, kind of our version of Messi here in San Diego. Would be the exempt player that doesn't count toward the salary cap, would be a big star that would be anchored, kind of a cross-border international star that would be kind of building around. And, you know, I'm not going to claim that I know everything about soccer, but the people who do are very excited about the possibility of San Diego FC already landing a star player before really they've signed a couple of other kind of young prospect type players, but for the most part the major players will join next year when they have the expansion draft and they'll build the rest of their roster. But this could be the signature piece already in more than a year out from their very first game. So some exciting news for soccer fans and San Diego FC fans. I really do want to get into the MLS, as you know, I'll probably pay more attention this year than I ever have before, knowing that year we're going to have our own team. Yeah. So kind of as a just kind of a prep season, like to see how it's all working and kind of the flow of the season. So we'll be ready to go when we get our team competing starting next May. All right, one last check of traffic, and then we'll do a little crossover. Annie Heilbrun in the studio going to join us right after this traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. All right, with Woods out, thought this would be a good time to do a little crossover check-in. We've got Annie from Annie and Elston here, who I need to thank personally for moderating last week's roundtable pizza roundtable when I was on vacation and out of town. How did that go, by the way, corralling all of the hosts here into something semi-coherent for an hour plus? I heard you guys had, you actually had to do like an extra 5 minutes or so to get into the pregame show.
I said before that show last week, I go, who's got the tougher job in media and corralling a bunch of animals? Is it Ernie Johnson and all those guys on TNT or Annie and the 97.3 crew? I think you had the tougher job.
I'm gonna go with me on that one. Yeah. Ben, Paul, great to be with you guys. Listening to the show this morning. Great job by both of you. So it was, I had a moment early on, like the first 5 minutes, where I went, oh no, this is just going to go off the tracks. I'll never get it. And then everyone settled down. But there was the first 5 minutes that I was like, oh man. Now I know why Ben, you know, he gave that advice of, hey, just know who to go to, know who to talk to. But no, everybody was great after that.
It's funny. You see everybody wanting to jump in and you get excited about it because, okay, this is a good topic. Everyone wants to sound off, but then they're all kind of leaning forward and ready to talk. And you're going like, oh no, they're all going to speak at once. And what are we going to do here? This is going to devolve into chaos.
Yes.
And chaos.
I felt bad. And you do such a great job with it. And I'm so happy that you'll be back tomorrow. No, he did, but he really does, Paulie. It's a tough thing to corral, everyone. Yeah, Paul's just looking at me like, whatever.
Well, we'll be back tomorrow. You can you can go back to your normal role as, you know, answering when I call upon you for tomorrow's roundtable. Gotta say, if the Padres didn't find a way to win either last night or today, it was going to be a really bleak roundtable tomorrow. I mean, it's hard not to, just because of where the team has been the last couple of seasons and the disappointments for fans in 2021 and then 2023 especially, it's hard not to see the sky falling. Even if it's not actually falling yet, and it is fairly early in the season, and some of these problems are the same kind of problems that every team will face over the course of the year. As Padres fans, when they lose five in a row, it feels like panic time. It really does. And I feel the same way. I understand it.
I can't blame fans for feeling like that. I really can't. You do get that sense of like, oh no, here we go again. There's shades of last year. It's funny too, talking to people in the clubhouse. Last year at this time was very much, no, we're going to get it going. It's all good. Everybody relax. Now they'll say, hey, we're in a tough stretch. We do have a sense of urgency in here. We know we've got to turn it around. So there is this awareness inside the clubhouse, as there should be, that we don't want to go down that road of last year.
I got caught up in it last year as well. I was so firmly confident that the talent will win out, that this team is too good to continue to struggle, that this is just a blip, a momentary. This is funny almost. It was almost like, I'm laughing, like, this is kind of funny that they're actually struggling a little bit, because eventually they're going to dominate. They have too many good players, Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis Jr., Manny Machado, Xander Bogaerts. They're going to clobber opponents. They're going to have this month where they win 24 games, and we're going to laugh at the early part of the season, and then it never happens.
It never happened.
Now, of course, this year we don't feel the same way. We're not anticipating a giant run at any point. So the further they fall, the deeper they go under 500, the more it seems like, okay, well, this is the reality of this team this year. And I hope it's not, but I do have that worry like everybody else.
It does. It feels like the margin for error, and I heard Jesse say it on with you guys yesterday in a different way, right? But we've been saying it kind of since the season started too, is just, you don't want to get too far down because you're not sure if this is the right necessarily makeup of the team, by no fault of theirs, but just you lost a few players over the offseason. We're not really sure yet. It's a tough NL West, although it has kind of started kind of slow, but you just don't want to get too far back because you feel like there's other teams too that are going to be contending for that wild card spot. And you don't want to put yourself in that hole where you've got to suddenly run off some miraculous run or win every series from, a certain point to the end of the season, or put your fate in other teams where now they've got to lose in order for you to make it. And there's always a little bit of that, but the more you can control that and stay at least around that 500 mark, and honestly, they know all of that, right? And I don't think that they're going out there and like, well, who cares? I really believe that they're going out there doing everything they can to win the game. Been a tough run, though.
Offensive struggles are the ones that stand out to fans the most when you have multiple games where you only score two and you don't come through with runners in scoring position. But I heard you and Craig talking yesterday. It really is the pitching that needs to get going. If this team wants to go somewhere, anywhere this year, they're going to need their top pitchers to step up and pitch like top pitchers. And yesterday, they got exactly what they needed from Yu Darvish. The five inning, that was huge. Yeah. Today, I think, will be just as big to see Joe Musgrove at least take a step forward. I'm not saying that he has to throw eight shutout innings, but keep the Padres in the game. Be Joe. Be that bulldog. Give me at least six, maybe into the seventh. If you give up a couple of runs, fine. Just give your team a chance to win the game and keep the ball in the yard if you can, or at most maybe one, but four home runs, multiple home runs. It just can't continue this way.
You're absolutely right. And what a huge start by Yu Darvish. Ben, both of you know, sometimes you go on the injured list and it's it's to get your neck right, but sometimes it can also get you right. It can get you kind of mentally. Make sure you're cleaning up some other pitches that you maybe have been struggling with. Now, you, Darvish, did not mention any of that, but I've so many players that have come off the injured list have said before in the past, it helped me just take a step back, take a breather. These guys have had a weird spring training, a weird start to the season. Yu Darvish looked like Yu Darvish last night. He was in command. He was able to use a good mix of his pitches. Didn't seem like there was even a whole lot of exertion. You know, sometimes you just glides through those innings like he does. And so, and you know, it's good for Joe, and Joe has said it before, and he said it actually when Yu was on the injured list, it was kind of, you know, he was kind of bummed for obvious reasons, but also he likes to watch Yu go before him because they have similar types of pitches. They both have a lot of a variety of pitches, and he sees how he attacks the lineup. So good for Joe to be able to watch that from Yu tonight. Joe maintains he is not injured. There's been a weird start to the season. He's still trying to get the feel. He had a similar start when he came for the first month last season, but he was coming off of that kettlebell thing. He was coming off the different injuries. So, but he had an ERA over six his first five starts, and then he was able to lock it back in and cruise there for a while before he, you know, he had the other like hiccup, injury hiccup. So, I'm not, you know, completely sold on the fact that this is an injury, but I think that what they want to do is try to look at, okay, let's get you right. Let's get you where you're feeling good, Joe, and then assess it from there.
Yeah, we always, injuries sometimes is black and white things. Either a guy's hurt or he's healthy. And usually the reality is way in between. He may be healthy, but he may also be still recovering from the after effects, yes, of an injury. And that's a whole different thing entirely. Or you may not be healthy, but it may not really affect you that much. And, you know, it hurts, but hey, I'm still effective. I'm still throwing. So are you injured or are you not injured if you're effective? It's a much bigger gray area for these athletes than we as fans, yeah, ever. Is he hurt or is he healthy? Both, probably. Always, at the same time.
It's huge. It's such a great point. Like, there is this, you know, bridge between injured list and purely healthy. And they're all dealing with some kind of aches and pains. But to the extent that Joe might be feeling something, or also remember, he had a weird season last year, you know, coming off of that healthy off season. But now that you get thrown into Korea, they didn't have the normal spring training ramp up at all. They jumped right into pitching those five innings. They went 1, 2, 3, 4, and then five in Korea when normally you go like 1, 2, you do 3 innings twice, 4, you do 5 innings twice. You like, there's such a ramp up that's different than what they did this year. So it doesn't surprise me to see this rotation a little bit off. And in fact, it was pointed out to me that Dylan Cease is probably the only one not hit by that, and Waldron, because he didn't pitch in Korea. But Dylan Cease had kind of a, even though his spring training was shortened because he was with the White Sox, they treated his time in Korea and then his time in the exhibition games in San Diego afterward as spring training starts. So he had even a little bit more of a ramp up, the normal ramp up, than these other guys did. So I think that there's a few things to watch for with this rotation. And with Joe, absolutely, you nailed it. There's probably a sliding scale of where that injury is.
Well, you guys will be heading toward the EcoWater SoCal pregame show at 12:10 today with the 1:10 first pitch. So a little bit of a jam-packed show, I'm sure, for you guys. Is you got to get everything in the next couple of hours with talking about yesterday's game, today's game, and everything else that's going on in the world of sports.
We're excited for it. 2 hours, we lead into that pregame show, and then Padres get a chance to... Uh-oh, what did I say?
No, I don't know if you had a chance to yesterday. Did you get to talk about Brian Kenny's comments yesterday?
We talked about it a little bit, and then we shut it off.
That happened before the end of your show?
Yeah,
because we spent a lot of time of it this morning.
I'm so glad you did, because I found it so ridiculous. And I'm like, you know, I know you got to fill space. I know you need to do things like that, but it was so... What are you doing? We're in April. Why are you talking about trading this guy? Why are you talking about one of the anchors of this team? Someone who, by the way, has already shown that coming back from that injury, from, you know, the injuries that he's had and the three surgeries, that he's been making the correct steps, gaining strength,
yes,
had a normal offseason this last offseason.
The trajectory has been,
yes,
the right one that you've been looking for if you're the Padres. It's not red flags. He made it seem like, you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. is one giant red flag waving. He's not the same player. He's been progressing the way I think we all hoped he would, and the Padres are hoping he would. It was just one of the dumbest conversations I've seen on television in a long, long time.
It really was. And I just really believe that, like, you know, you... you asked the question, how does it get up the red, like, how does it get up the chain? Someone's got to approve that. Someone's got to say, hey, let's build graphics for that.
That's what I was saying.
Right? Like,
yeah. Directors,
no one stops for a second and goes,
yes.
Does this make any sense to anybody at all here? Does this, are we just letting Brian just, you know, continue with his vendetta against the Padres for some reason?
Hey, Padres fans are a bunch of suckers. Let's rile them up. Like, I don't, it made no sense. It was so stupid.
Right. Let's just get some clicks, guys. Let's just get some clicks. Low-hanging fruit.
Annie, have a good show today. Get the Padres, get everybody ready for a win, hopefully, today. Yeah. And then full tomorrow with a round table as well at the end.
With a round table and Ben hosting.
Yeah. And Woods will be back tomorrow at 6 a.m. Paulie, great job wearing multiple hats today.
Thank you, sir.
For Paul Reindel. I'm Ben Higgins. Annie and Elston coming up next. Have a great rest of your Wednesday from all of us here at San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody. As if Paulie didn't have enough to do, we also have some Legion tickets to give away that I neglected to do earlier, but let's do it right now. They got a big game coming up this Sunday at Snapdragon Stadium. Sorry, Paulie. Dallas Jackals will be in town, and you can win a pair by calling right now, 833-288-0973. Paulie's choice on the caller.
Oh, thank you.
What would you like?
Fourth caller.
Fourth caller, says Paulie. 833-288-0973. Call now. You can get your own tickets for San Diego's rugby team at SDLegion.com. Legion have done well in their first couple of seasons. We can only hope that San Diego FC, our new MLS team, will do as well as they get started as the Seals have done in their first couple of seasons. And the Legion, it looks like the San Diego FC MLS team is going to be landing a major international soccer star, according to reports, including one in the UT. The team is in final negotiations to sign Mexican national team star Chucky Lozano to a contract. It would be maybe a $12 million transfer fee. He would transfer in from his current Dutch club, PSV Eindhoven. He would play there until January and then join the San Diego FC club next year to their start of their first MLS season. Now, this month, May, is the 2024 MLS season gets underway. It'll be played without a San Diego team in town. 1 year from now, San Diego FC will be having their very first games at Snapdragon Stadium. And if all goes well, it looks like Chucky Lozano could be the star of that team, kind of our version of Messi here in San Diego. Would be the exempt player that doesn't count toward the salary cap, would be a big star that would be anchored, kind of a, you know, cross-border international star that the team
absolutely
would be kind of building around. And, you know, I'm not going to claim that I know everything about soccer, but the people who do are very excited about the possibility of San Diego FC already landing a star player before really they've signed a couple of other kind of young prospect type players, but for the most part the major players will join next year when they have the expansion draft and they'll build the rest of their roster. But this could be the signature piece already in more than a year out from their very first game. So some exciting news for soccer fans and San Diego FC fans. I really do want to get into the MLS, as you know, I'll probably pay more attention this year than I ever have before, knowing that year we're going to have our own team. Yeah. So kind of as a just kind of a prep season, like to see how it's all working and kind of the flow of the season. So we'll be ready to go when we get our team competing starting next May. All right. One last check of traffic and then we'll do a little crossover. Annie Heilbrun in the studio going to join us right after this traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. All right. With Woods out, thought this would be a good time to do a little crossover check-in. We've got Annie from Annie and Elston here, who I need to thank personally for moderating last week's roundtable pizza roundtable when I was on vacation and out of town. How did that go, by the way, corralling all of the hosts here into something semi-coherent for an hour plus? I heard you guys had, you actually had to do like an extra 5 minutes or so to get into the pregame show.
I said before that show last week, I go, who's got the tougher job in media and corralling a bunch of animals? Is it Ernie Johnson and all those guys on TNT or Annie and the 97.3 crew? I think you had the tougher job.
I'm gonna go with me on that one. Yeah. Ben, Paul, great to be with you guys. Listening to the show this morning, great job by both of you. So it was, I had a moment early on, like the first 5 minutes, where I went, oh no, this is just going to go off the tracks. I'll never get it. And then everyone settled down. But there was the first 5 minutes that I was like, oh man. Now I know why Ben, you know, gave that advice of, hey, just know who to go to, know who to talk to. But no, everybody was great after that.
It's funny. You see everybody wanting to jump in and you get excited about it because, okay, this is a good topic. Everyone wants to sound off, but then they're all kind of leaning forward and ready to talk. And you're going like, oh no, they're all going to speak at once. And what are we going to do here? This is going to devolve into chaos.
Yes.
And chaos.
I felt bad. And you do such a great job with it. And I'm so happy that you'll be back tomorrow.
Have to inflate his ego.
No, he did, but he really does, Pauly. It's a tough thing to corral, everyone.
Yeah,
Paul's just looking at me like, whatever.
Well, we'll be back tomorrow. You can you can go back to your normal role as, you know, answering when I call upon you for tomorrow's roundtable. Gotta say, if the Padres didn't find a way to win either last night or today, it was going to be a really bleak roundtable tomorrow. I mean, it's hard not to, just because of where the team has been the last couple of seasons and the disappointment for fans in 2021 and then 2023 especially, it's hard not to see the sky falling. Even if it's not actually falling yet, and it is fairly early in the season, and some of these problems are the same kind of problems that every team will face over the course of the year. As Padres fans, when they lose five in a row, it feels like panic time. It really does. And I feel the same way. I understand it.
I can't blame fans for feeling like that. I really can't. You do get that sense of like, oh no, here we go again. There's shades of last year. It's funny too, talking to people in the clubhouse. Last year at this time was very much, no, we're going to get it going. It's all good. Everybody relax. Now they'll say, hey, we're in a tough stretch. We do have a sense of urgency in here. We know we've got to turn it around. So there is this awareness inside the clubhouse, as there should be, that we don't want to go down that road of last year.
I got caught up in it last year as well. I was so firmly confident that the talent will win out, that this team is too good to continue to struggle, that this is just a blip, a momentary. This is funny almost. It was almost like, I'm laughing, like, this is kind of funny that they're actually struggling a little bit, because eventually they're going to dominate. They have too many good players, Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis Jr., Manny Machado, Xander Bogaerts. They're going to clobber opponents. They're going to have this month where they win 24 games, and we're going to laugh at the early part of the season, and then it never happens.
It never happened.
Now, of course, this year we don't feel the same way. We're not anticipating a giant run at any point. So the further they fall, the deeper they go under 500, the more it seems like, okay, well, this is the reality of this team this year. And I hope it's not, but I do have that worry like everybody else.
It does. It feels like the margin for error, and I heard Jesse say it on with you guys yesterday in a different way, right? But we've been saying it kind of since the season started too, is just, you don't want to get too far down because you're not sure if this is the right necessarily makeup of the team, by no fault of theirs, but just you lost a few players over the offseason. We're not really sure yet. It's a tough NL West, although it has kind of started kind of slow, but you just don't want to get too far back because you feel like there's other teams too that are going to be contending for that wild card spot. And you don't want to put yourself in that hole where you've got to suddenly run off some miraculous run or win every series from, a certain point to the end of the season, or put your fate in other teams where now they've got to lose in order for you to make it. And there's always a little bit of that, but the more you can control that and stay at least around that 500 mark, and honestly, they know all of that, right? And I don't think that they're going out there and like, well, who cares? I really believe that they're going out there doing everything they can to win the game. Been a tough run, though.
Offensive struggles are the ones that stand out to fans the most when you have multiple games where you only score two and you don't come through with runners in scoring position. But I heard you and Craig talking yesterday. It really is the pitching that needs to get going. If this team wants to go somewhere, anywhere this year, they're going to need their top pitchers to step up and pitch like top pitchers. And yesterday, they got exactly what they needed from Yu Darvish. The five inning, that was huge.
Yeah.
Today, I think, will be just as big to see Joe Musgrove at least take a step forward. I'm not saying that he has to throw eight shutout innings, but keep the Padres in the game. Be Joe. Be that bulldog. Give me at least six, maybe into the seventh. If you give up a couple of runs, fine. Just give your team a chance to win the game and keep the ball in the yard if you can, or at most maybe one, but four home runs, multiple home runs. It just can't continue this way.
You're absolutely right. And what a huge start by Yu Darvish. You know, Ben, both of you know, sometimes you go on the injured list and it's to get your neck right, but sometimes it can also get you right. It can get you kind of mentally. Make sure you're cleaning up some other pitches that you maybe have been struggling with. Now, Yu Darvish did not mention any of that, but I've so many players that have come off the injured list have said before in the past, it helped me just take a step back, take a breather. These guys have had a weird spring training, a weird start to the season. Yu Darvish looked like Yu Darvish last night. He was in command. He was able to use a good mix of his pitches. Didn't seem like there was even a whole lot of exertion. You know, sometimes you just glides through those innings like he does. And so, and you know, it's good for Joe, and Joe has said it before, and he said it actually when you was on the injured list, it was kind of, you know, he was kind of bummed for obvious reasons, but also he likes to watch you go before him because they have similar types of pitches. They both have a lot of a variety of pitches, and he sees how he attacks the lineup. So good for Joe to be able to watch that from you tonight. Joe maintains he is not injured. There's been a weird start to the season. He's still trying to get the feel. He had a similar start when he came for the first month last season. But he was coming off of that kettlebell thing. He was coming off the different injuries. So, but he had an ERA over 6 his first 5 starts. And then he was able to lock it back in and cruise there for a while before he, you know, he had the other, like, injury hiccup. So I'm not, you know, completely sold on the fact that this is an injury, but I think that what they want to do is try to look at, okay, let's get you right. Let's get you where you're feeling good, Joe, and then assess it from there.
Yeah, we always injuries sometimes as black and white things. Either a guy's hurt or he's healthy. And usually the reality is way in between. He may be healthy, but he may also be still recovering from the after effects of an injury. And that's a whole different thing entirely. Or you may not be healthy, but it may not really affect you that much. And, you know, it hurts, but hey, I'm still effective. I'm still throwing. So are you injured or are you not injured if you're effective? It's a much bigger gray area for these athletes than we as fans ever. Is he hurt or is he healthy? Both, probably. Always, at the same time.
It's huge. It's such a great point. Like, there is this, you know, bridge between injured list and purely healthy. And they're all dealing with some kind of aches and pains. But to the extent that Joe might be feeling something, or also remember, he had a weird season last year, you know, coming off of that healthy off season. But now that you get thrown into Korea, they didn't have the normal spring training ramp up at all. They jumped right into pitching those 5 innings. They went 1, 2, 3, 4, and then 5 in Korea when normally you go like 1, 2, you do 3 innings twice, 4, you do 5 innings twice. You like, there's such a ramp up that's different than what they did this year. So it doesn't surprise me to see this rotation a little bit off. And in fact, it was pointed out to me that Dylan Cease is probably the only one not hit by that. And Waldron, because he didn't pitch in Korea. But Dylan Cease had kind of a, even though his spring training was shortened because he was with the White Sox, they treated his time in Korea and then his time in the exhibition games in San Diego afterward as spring training starts. So he had even a little bit more of a ramp up, the normal ramp up, than these other guys did. So I think that there's a few things to watch for with this rotation. And with Joe, absolutely, you nailed it. There's probably a sliding scale of where that injury is.
Well, you guys will be heading toward the EcoWater SoCal pregame show at 12:10 today with the 1:10 first pitch. So a little bit of a jam-packed show, I'm sure, for you guys. Is you got to get everything in the next couple of hours with talking about yesterday's game, today's game, and everything else that's going on in the world of sports.
We're excited for it. 2 hours, we lead into that pregame show, and then Padres get a chance to... Uh-oh, what did I say?
No, I don't know if you had a chance to yesterday. Did you get to talk about Brian Kenny's comments yesterday?
We talked about it a little bit, and then we shut it off.
That happened before the end of your show?
Yeah,
because we spent a lot of time of it this morning.
I'm so glad you did, because I found it so ridiculous. And I'm like, you know, I know you got to fill space. I know you need to do things like that, but it was so... What are you doing? We're in April. Why are you talking about trading this guy? Why are you talking about one of the anchors of this team? Someone who, by the way, has already shown that coming back from that injury, from, you know, the injuries that he's had and the 3 surgeries, that he's been making the correct steps, gaining strength, had a normal offseason this last offseason.
The trajectory has been the right one that you've been looking for if you're the Padres. It's not red flags. He made it seem like, you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. is one giant red flag waving. He's not the same player. He's been progressing the way I think we all hoped he would, and the Padres are hoping he would. It was just one of the dumbest conversations I've seen on television in a long, long time.
It really was. And I just really believe that, like, you asked the question, how does it get up the red, like, how does it get up the chain? Someone's got to approve that. Someone's got to say, hey, let's build graphics for that.
That's what I was saying.
That's right.
Yeah. Directors,
no one stops for a second and goes,
yes.
Does this make any sense to anybody at all here? Are we just letting Brian just, you know, continue with his vendetta against the Padres for some reason?
Padres fans are a bunch of suckers. Let's rile them up. Like, it made no sense. It was so stupid.
Right. Let's just get some clicks, guys. Let's just get some clicks. Low-hanging fruit.
Annie, have a good show today. Get the Padres, get everybody ready for a win, hopefully, today. Yeah. And then full tomorrow with a round table as well at the end.
With a round table and Ben hosting.
Yeah. And Woods will be back tomorrow at 6 a.m. Paulie, great job wearing multiple hats today.
Thank you, sir.
For Paul Reindel. I'm Ben Higgins. Annie and Elston coming up next. Have a great rest of your Wednesday from all of us here at San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.